Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, Dublin, of course, has been written about by many great songwriters down the years. And now Harcourt Street, the road which leads away from St. Stephen's Green, is the muse of musical theatre star Colm Wilkinson. And Colm joins me now on the line from Dublin. Good morning, Colm. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome, Miriam. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much. Listen to me. I've been listening to your song. It's great. Tell me about it. Why Harcourt Street?
Well, I played. There was an old ballroom there. It's long gone, called the Four Provinces. And I played there, I suppose. Well, when I was 15. Mm-hmm. I started playing guitar and was in a band there. And then eventually, well, not that shortly afterwards, I moved down the street to a club called the Five Club. It was in the basement of one of those Georgian houses.
Yeah,
and it was the sort of the venue where all of the sort of beat groups played. I was with a group called the Action, and we played sort of James Brown and sort of more black music than white music, quite honest. And that's the stuff I liked and always have liked. And That's the association with that, and I was with that sort of music for a long time.
When you walk down the street now, Colm, does it feel very different?
Oh my God, that's what brought the song on. The first time, because I've been away for a while, I would go like close to it, but I lived in Grove Park, and I used to use that as sort of as a conduit down into. I used to walk from Grove Park down into Stephen's Green and down into Grafton Street, and that was the way I would go. I wouldn't go Camden Street; I would go down Harcourt Street because I don't know. I just seemed to be closer to the green or whatever, and it was a nice street to walk on. Camden Street was very busy and bustly and all that kind of stuff. It was quiet. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of sort of memories of that place in terms of, when I saw it, that's what really shocked me into sort of the revelation of, or the realization of how much it had changed. People are talking about Copper Jacks and whatever that is. Well, I don't know what Copper Jacks is. I thought it was a toilet, to be quite honest, but how I never. I started to write the song. I started to feel the words. It came out actually quite quickly, that song. Some songs, you know, it takes a while. You work on them, and over the years, you might sort of perfect them or whatever you want to call it. This song came out fully formed. You know, the whole thing just came out, and it was quite nice. I liked the way it came out. You know, believe it or not, it wasn't meant for commercialism. It wasn't meant. I came home here for the first time in my life, Miriam. Sorry, I'm wrapping on.
No, that's great. Go on.
I came in for the first time in my life. I had enough money to say, I'll do my own stuff. I don't need no record company telling you what to do, no musical director sort of telling you where to walk, what to do. Though I very rarely was told how to sing. They just let me do my thing. But I just felt free to do my own music at long last in the way I wanted to. And I went into, with Brian Byrne, the arranger, went into Jellistown Studios. We put down four tracks of my music the way I just wanted it to be put down. Brian is amazing. He translated it all, what I was talking to him about, into great arrangements. And Harcourt Street was the first one we mixed down. We mixed down that track, yeah.
Well, look, stay with us if you don't mind, Colm. We're going to listen now to your song, Harcourt Street. And, of course, it is available on all digital platforms. Let's listen to it now.
Thank you.
Cannot stop the page to turn back time, but now I guess I'll never know the answer you always waited for me down the lane on Hawkett Street, round Hawkett Lane. I will never ever walk this way again. With Copeland suit and pointed shoes and music always falling with the rain. And woman, all my ghosts are back to haunt me. And I never meant to hurt or cause you pain, but if I did, can you please forgive me? I was young and foolish, life was just a game. On Hawkett Street, round Hawkett Lane, I will never walk your cobble streets again. Louis Copeland suit and pointed shoes and music always falling with the rain. And Dublin's like a bank of my old memories, wrapped around my head and in my brain, and they seem to be saying, go tell your story, for you'll never ever walk this way again. Round Hawkett Street, round Hawkett Lane, I will never ever walk this way again. Louis Copeland suit and pointed shoes and music always falls. I hear your voice still call, I hear the music call, I hear our voices call in the rain. Once again they're calling, once again you're calling, your voice is always calling in the rain.
Beautiful. Colin Wilkson, that's your song, Hawkett Street. It's available on all digital platforms.
I'm very privileged, Miriam, for you to play that, actually. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much. Our listeners love it.
I'm very fortunate. I just wanted to say this because you've just played that. There's a lot of great Irish artists out there who just don't get played enough on radio. Irish music doesn't get a fair hearing in this country, and it really upsets me when I come home and hear that. And people say, well, we don't get requests for these VJs. Well, you know, if you don't play it, people are not going to request it. You know, that's the simple answer for me. Anyway, I'm sorry. I just thought I'd shoot that in there. I'm honored to get that played there because, you know, a lot of great talent out there goes unplayed, unheard of. In Canada, it's something like 40% mandatory Canadian content. There's no mandatory Irish content here, as far as I know. And they should play Irish artists. That's the only way. The only way we make money to make a career is to be heard.
Okay, fair enough. Now, listen, our listeners go, Colm Wilkinson still has an amazing voice. This song shows it off really well. Keep singing, Colm. Thanks for the music. That's from Anita and Scarries. Two more go class song. That's brilliant. Paul Kelly says, hi, Miriam. Ask Colm, does he recall playing on a Sunday morning with Pierce Webb and Gulliver's in New Street? You clearly do.
Of course, they were the good old days. Yeah. That was fantastic. Yeah, Pierce Webb and Gulliver's. Yeah, that was, they did time.
That's a nice memory for you. Before I let you go, how is it nice being back in Dublin and how's the lockdown been for you?
Oh, it's wonderful. Back in Ireland, I mean, until this happened. Well, the lockdown is going down. I'm very fortunate. I have a little place here, a nice kind of garden I can walk around. And I've got my wife, Deirdre, who's here, an incredible person. I was so fortunate to meet this lady and get married. She's a rock of things and sort of talks me off the ledge always. It's great, yeah. So I'm doing fine once I have Deirdre around.
Well, that's really lovely. Listen, Colm, your line's going a bit bad there. Thanks so much again. Oh, that's a great song.
Thank you, Miriam. Take care of yourself.
My pleasure. Mind yourself. We go out listening to a little bit of Colm singing, of course, in Les Mis. That's a lovely reaction to Colm Wilkinson. Morning, Miriam. I'm so delighted to hear Colm's voice. That song is really beautiful. I saw him in Wexford Opera House years ago. Amazing voice. Really nice man. That's from Mary in Dungarvan. Lots more. But I don't have time because on the line is Danny O'Reilly of the Coronas. And their fans can rejoice this week because they have a new single and it's a duet with Gabrielle Aplin. Thanks for joining us, Danny. How are you?
Not too bad, Miriam. How are you?
Doing great. Listen, tell me about the song, how the duet came about.
Yeah, well, Gabrielle's a friend of mine, and her and her fiancé, Alfie, who's in a great Irish band called Hudson Taylor, they live in Brighton, and they invited me over to their house last summer, and yeah, it was just really relaxed, organic. We just started messing around with a song, and that became thick of it, and we recorded it at the end of last year. And yeah, we're really happy about it. We were delighted to get Gabrielle featuring on the song as well. She's a big success in her own right in the UK and everywhere, really, you know. So yeah, we were delighted with how it turned out. We sort of wanted to approach the duet like sort of just simply. We didn't want to get, oftentimes I think these days collaborations, you know, with two singers, they can be sort of singing at each other or over each other. And we wanted to just keep it simple and have a sort of chilled vibe, and I think it suited the song and it worked, so we're delighted.
And of course, to remind people, Danny, Gabrielle, she really made it in a big way when she did the cover of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, didn't she, to the John Lewis Christmas ad.
That's right, yeah, she had a number one in the UK with that, so it was a huge success for her. But I mean, she's had a couple of really big albums herself as well, and she's an artist similar to us in the UK, I think, in that she has her own label now, and she's sort of been through a major label sort of time, I suppose, similar to the way we were, and we're our own label here in Ireland. So it was really easy to make it happen and just to work together and get the single together. But she's great. She's a great writer as well. As I say, the three of us wrote the song, and you know, with this album, I've actually been co-writing a lot more with different people and different friends of mine, and it's a cool way to sort of, I don't know, I think evolve my songwriting a little bit. So yeah, it was a really enjoyable process.
And your new album, of course, is coming out, I think, the end of July, Danny. What's it like actually writing songs during the lockdown? I mean, is it a good or a bad time? And have you thought ahead about how you'll promote the album?
Yeah, well, initially when the lockdown started, I got to Dingle before the lockdown, and I've been in Dingle for 12 weeks, and you know, it's a great place to isolate. To be honest, I come down to Dingle to write anyway myself, and I would often sort of isolate myself away. So that side of things wasn't really difficult for me, but initially I did find it hard to be creative. Everyone, of course, kept saying to me, "Ah, it's grand for you. You can just go and write the next album. You'll be grand." Like, but I found it hard to because I don't know, it was such a big thing. And then of course we had the added sort of weirdness of the fact that our band name is quite similar to the virus.
So I was going to ask
that was
you.
Sort of on my mind as well. And I was like, well, what am I going to do? And so for the first couple of weeks, first maybe month or so, I didn't really write at all. But I decided to do this thing every night when I was in isolation in Dingle, where I would do a different cover of an Irish band, of a different Irish song. And it sort of felt, it was good for me to have a creative outlet to do something, work on a song each day, learn a new song of friends of mine's bands and older stuff as well, and just a mix of everything. And that sort of gave me a bit of structure, and that was something that I sort of did for myself just on the Coronas Instagram page, and it got an amazing reaction, and I kept doing them. Then as lockdown got increased, I did about 30 of them, and it was great fun, and then eventually it felt right to start writing. So I think it's important for people not to put too much pressure on themselves. There can be a sort of productivity almost competition on social media, especially. And what are you doing? Did you learn a new language? Are you getting fit? Did you read something? You know, and I think it can be hard on people, and I think it's okay to just get through it, you know, whatever way it is, you know. And as I say, for me initially, I couldn't even think. We were meant to release an album, and I couldn't even think about moving forward with self-promotion, and the single was meant to come out initially at the start of lockdown, and it just didn't feel right. Now, I mean, now although obviously it's an ongoing serious situation, it's sort of, it you know, if we felt like we had turned a corner and we sort of adapted and evolved and we felt ready to release, and we've been doing our best to promote it, you know, from isolation. But and we'll do the same when the album comes in July, whatever we're allowed to do. If there's some sort of social distancing small concert we can do, just even to promote the album and film it maybe or something like that, we'll do it. I can't see any mass gatherings happening by then, but I mean, we're looking at all sorts of different things, maybe even drive-in movies, like concerts where people drive their car in and we play a few songs. We're trying to come up with sort of, I suppose, you know, inventive ways to promote it when the album comes out at the end of July. But of course, it's constantly evolving, so you can't plan too far ahead.
No.
But we're actually enjoying the challenge of it. We're glad to get the music out, and thankfully the single is getting an amazing reaction, and you know, we're looking forward to, well, we're obviously looking forward to when gigs actually come back, but I mean, we're also just looking forward to the challenge of getting through this summer and releasing the album, and you know, as I say, trying to promote it whatever way we can.
Well, listen, we're going to listen now to the single. It's lovely. It's called cool. Lost in the Thick of It. It's yourselves, it. The Coronas, with Gabriel Aplin. Thanks so much. Stay safe, Danny. Enjoy Dingle. And of course, your album is going to be released on July the 31st, and you can pre-order it now from the Coronas. Let's listen to it.
Thanks.
I didn't need it. I said enough. The way you walked away really messed me up. I tried to salvage, left it alone. Won't make it better. I could never do it all. I'm good for a little bit, but I get lost in the thick of it. I hate to say that I'm wrong. Feels better playing along. Hoping you don't notice it when I'm just a bit low-spirited. I gotta face it alone. There must be nothing you've left to prove. Turn it into something that you never wanna lose. I want a lawyer, give me the lawyer too. I say I'm guilty if it brings me back to you. I'm good for a little bit, but I get lost in the thick of it sometimes. I hate to say that I'm wrong. Feels better playing along. Hoping you don't notice it when I'm just a bit low-spirited, and I gotta face it alone. Maybe we can meet up sometime, just a little knees up sometime. Walk until our feet hurt sometime, cause we're only growing, not as old. We used to be addicted one time, we couldn't even fake it. I guess it's when we drifted. You're right, I hope you know it's never over. I'm good for a little bit, but I get lost in the thick of it sometimes. I hate to say that I'm wrong. Feels better playing along. Hoping you don't notice it when I'm just a bit low-spirited, and I gotta face it alone. Yeah, I'm good for a little bit.
Stunning harmonies there from the Coronas and Gabriel Aplin, says one of our listeners. Love listening to Danny. Well, just last month, on April the 7th, John Prine, one of the most beloved and revered American singer-songwriters, died from COVID-19. He left behind heartbroken fans, including Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Bonnie Raitt, who'd all grown up in his songs, such as Hello in There and Angel from Montgomery. But none were as heartbroken as his three sons and his Irish wife, Fiona Whelan. And I'm delighted to be now joined by Fiona from the family home in Nashville. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning, Miriam. It's very nice to be with you.
First of all, I am so terribly sorry about the loss of your beautiful John. How are you doing?
Well, you know, when friends ask me that question, or my family in Ireland ask me that question, sometimes I'll say, I was hoping you'd tell me. It's very much uncharted territory. You know, we've all had loss and grief in our lives, but I know that losing my husband has been the hardest thing I've faced. But I'm doing okay. I get up every day and I have breakfast. I go through the motions and somehow another day ends.
Well, let's go right back, Fiona. You're originally from Ardran, County Donegal, aren't you?
I am indeed, yes.
Tell me about your family in Donegal, first of all.
Well, I have a large extended family in Ardra. You know, we grew up there. My father was a headmaster of the local school. So he was, in fact, my teacher until I was 12 years old, until I went to secondary school. I have five sisters, my mother. They're all still in Ireland. And aunts, uncles, everything. I mean, Ardra is still pretty much a home place for me. It really is. Even though John and I have a little home in Galway, Ardra will always be special. My mother moved back there, in fact, just about a year ago, just to be close to family. She's 80 years old, though you'd never believe it. So now it's wonderful because I get the opportunity to go back to Ardra when I can and visit with her, which I really hope I'll be able to do as soon as I can, as soon as we all can start moving around again.
It's such a beautiful part of the world. Tell me now, because yours was a true love story, Fiona. Tell my listeners, who might not know the story, how you met John Prine and when you met John Prine.
Well, I think my story with John started actually when I was 17 years old. My oldest son, Jody, his father, came one day to me and said, you know, I have to work the night shift tonight. I've got these tickets to see John Prine. Do you want to go with a girlfriend or whatever? So in those days at 17, I would have gone to see two flies crawling up the wall. So sure. So Vivian and I headed off to the National Stadium. And, you know, honestly, I wasn't overly impressed. It was a little sleepy. There was three musicians on stage. And but I do remember as we left and we were leaving early, I stood at the back of the stadium in Dublin, against the wall with the condensation running down the wall. I don't know if you remember the National Stadium.
Yeah, I sure do.
The boxing stadium. And I heard the lines, sweet songs never last too long on broken radios. And I was glued to the wall. I thought, how does he know? How does he know that? Mm. My father had died when I was 13, almost 14 years old. And the radio was a big connection for me to my father. He listened religiously to the radio. And today, to this day, we all love radio. My whole family, we love radio. We so appreciate the connection, that human connection. It's what I miss here in the United States, actually. And somehow over the years, his name or his likeness came up. You know, every couple of years, I say, oh, that's that John Prine guy. Yeah. Mm. Sweet songs never last too long. And then in 1988, I was actually working at Windmill Lane Studios. The Point Depot was opening for the first time, and they had an extravaganza of what we would now call Americana musicians come to open the new venue. I went both evenings. We were providing some production assistance with the events, and I met John at an after party in good old Bloom's Hotel. That was a great musician hangout back in the 80s. I was standing at the bar, close to the bar. I was speaking with Mary Stokes, who's a beautiful blues song singer from Dublin. I know you know who she is. Mm. Mary and I had gone to high school together. Anyway, I'm talking with her, catching up, and over her shoulder, I see John walk towards us. or just what, coming to what bias. And I said, oh, that's John Prine again. And she called him and said, hey, John, I want you to meet someone. And, you know, we talked about it over the years. And as crazy as it sounds, it was really love at first sight. I mean, it was. There was something just happened in that moment when we met. And, you know, we had a long distance courtship for many years, just phone calls and visits. And then in 1993, I came here to Nashville just to see if we could make some sense of a world for John and me, some way that we could become a family. I had an 11-year-old son, Jody, that John ultimately adopted, and we went on to have two children of our own.
'Cause my love is true, my love is only for you, and I would never be blue if I could be with you always. Then we travel far to some big shining star, just you and my guitar, instead of sweethearts for always.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I speak about it now and what I tell people who maybe don't know that story, it sounds like a fairy tale. But there was a lot of realness to our lives, too. You know, we were both lonely people when we met. We were both people who hadn't had great success in relationships. And we found a way to understand each other and be together and to allow each other be who we were as individuals. But John was a very happy family man. He absolutely adored us, and there's no doubt about that. We know that. We have that in our hearts today.
It's such a lovely story. And reading research for this interview last night, Fiona, I thought one of the loveliest things, you said earlier that Jody obviously was your own son originally, and then that John adopted him.
Yes, John had made it clear from very early on, you know, when we first started having the babies, that he would love to adopt Jody. And he was always very conscious of making sure that Jody understood that he was the first child in many ways. He was the first child that John really had grown to love before he had his own sons. So that offer was on the table. But it wasn't until Jody was, I think, 24. He's 39 years old now, but he was in his mid-20s when, and he did this alone. He walked into the kitchen one Christmas Eve evening. We were all together with our traditional gathering, opening gifts, and he caught John in a quiet moment, and he said, you know, if that offer is still on the table, I'd be honored to be your son.
Oh.
That, I mean, John was so moved by that, and just, it was incredible. All three of us went to the court together, and we dressed up, and we sat there among all these beautiful little Chinese, Ethiopian, American baby. I mean, just these beautiful mixture of babies from all around the world. And there was Jody and sitting there in his suit and tie. And we went in there, and the judge offered us lollipops, just like he did to all the little children, the toddlers. And it was almost like a little wedding ceremony, is what it felt like to me. Yeah, the judge just asking and making sure we were sure that Jody and John were sure about what they were doing, and that it was, it was beautiful. It was lovely. It's remarkable, really, to get to revisit a lot of these memories in these days. Maybe that's one of the little hidden griefs, the little hidden gifts of grieving, is that I get to go back to these moments and relive them and really realize just how lucky and how grateful I am for everything we had together.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky, where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay. Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Well, sometimes we travel right down the Green River to the abandoned old prison down by Edry Hill, where the air smelled like snakes and we'd shoot with our pistols, but empty pop bottles was all we would kill. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River where paradise lay?
Because everyone, even reading about him, Fiona, and you knew him best of all, everyone remarked not just on his talents. I mean, when he died, our own president, Michael D. Higgins, of course, described him as the true master of songcraft. Bruce Springsteen said that he was crushed. But lots of people, Dylan, and before that, Kris Kristofferson, they all spoke, as well as his talent, about what a beautiful person he was inside. Mm-hmm. Just such a kind man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John was motivated purely by love. I can say that, and it's, it may even sound a little corny, but it is absolutely true. You know, he taught me a lot about love. He was the first man, all that way back in the 80s when I met him, he was the first man I'd ever heard. He would call his mother every day and tell her, I love you. So that really much, you know, it set a foundation for our lives together. It was always, I love you. It was leaving the house to go for a car wash, I love you. At the end of every day, I love you. He would call our boys, I love you. John was kind. He was not a, you know, he was not a perfect person. None of us are. But he was always motivated by true love. And he certainly loved his own life. He appreciated everything that he had in his own life. He was grateful and loved his own gift. He was sure of his talent. He was very confident in that. But in many ways, he was a very simple man, very simple. He liked to sit and watch his game shows at night. He liked to, nothing more than if I would just sit there and make fun of the same show. I would just, you know, rip it apart. Like, I can't believe you're watching this. Oh, my gosh. I mean, he just laughed. And he was a singular man, for sure.
And, of course, he won so many awards, Fiona. You know, he was given the Lifetime Achievement Award, the Grammys, and last year he was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. What's your favourite song of his? Is that Impossible?
Yeah, gosh, there's so many. I do love One Red Rose in the Bible. That song, I mean, just that whole, the whole imagery in that song is so beautiful. One of the things that I think his real, and when I say real fans, I mean the people who have followed him for the almost 50 years of his career. And something that John didn't really reveal the true depth of to me until we were many years into our marriage is that he had an absolute firm belief in God and in heaven. And that was kind of it. I mean, there wasn't any more, there wasn't any more philosophy behind that. He didn't, he always had a Bible, but I don't know if he ever read it, honestly. But he had an absolute belief in God, and God for him was love. It was simple. And so pretty much every song, John, not every, but a lot of his songs make that reference to God in one way or another. And so One Red Rose in the Bible, for me, sums it up, because there's a romanticism in it. There's a belief in it, and of course there's love.
Rain came down on a tin roof, hardly a sound was left from the birthday party. The kitchen light fell asleep on a bedroom floor. Well, me and her were talking softer than all the time before I lost her. Picture sat on top of the chest of drawers. One red rose in the Bible, pressed between a holy alphabet. Probably wouldn't believe you if you told me, but what I never knew, I never will forget. Rainy nights get dark real early, but
dress was soft, her hair was curly. We danced around the table to the old banjo. Rainy nights were made for lovers. We lay there still beneath the covers. I ain't never felt like that before.
And it's a beautiful song. Do you think that belief in God and in heaven, as you said earlier, helped him? Obviously, he had cancer a number of times. It came back. And then in the end, he got ill with COVID-19. Do you think his faith helped him through those times, Fiona?
I think love got John through those times. And if he believed that God is love and love is God, then yes, for sure. The sad thing about COVID, and this is true for not just John, but for all others who succumbed to this virus, is that it happens so fast. You know, you start off with some people start off with pretty benign symptoms, and it rapidly increases. So John, once he was put on a ventilator, was no longer able to communicate with us. So I don't know. I don't know that I'll never know that, but I have to believe that I believe his beliefs. I believe what he believed. I believe that if he knew that he was going to see his mom and his dad and his brother and his aunties, then that's exactly what happened.
And because that COVID-19 came upon, as you say, so quickly and so dramatically, did that take you completely by surprise as well?
Well, of course, you know, Miriam, I actually had COVID-19. I had the illness in the previous weeks before John passed. So it's, you know, that's one of the things that I'm grappling with right now. And I realize there are days when I realize that I've actually been run over by a train. You know, I'm a very productive person in my usual life. I can be very busy. I can multitask. I'm a perfectionist. You know, I'm owning up to all of it. And I've noticed that in those times when I've tried to do that in the last few weeks, I just fall over. Getting COVID was no joke, and it was not a pleasant illness by any means. But the hardest part for me now, when I think about this, is that I was isolated and quarantined away from John right up until the day I was released from quarantine and I had to take him to the hospital. So we didn't have time together. We didn't have time, you know. I think mm-hmm. about it, well, maybe I should have just been with him, since, you know, but none of us know what is going to come around a corner. But when I was released from quarantine, I went downstairs and I was really with and close to John for the first time. It was his first day of displaying symptoms, and I had to help him get dressed, and I had to get him to the car, and I had to bring him to ER and leave him at the door. I wasn't allowed in the hospital. That's been hard. Mm-hmm. That has been hard. The next time I saw him, he was already sedated, and was the last 17 hours of his life I got to spend with him. And I talked to him, and I even sang a song. I played messages that the boys, our boys and his brothers, had recorded and sent to me. Iris Dement, that night, in the little hours, the wee hours of the morning, going into April 7th, Iris Dement sat at her piano and sang The Old Rugged Cross. Sorry. And I played that for him. That was a precious time. You know, I got to tell him things that I hadn't told him before. It's funny, and I have to believe this is true of most relationships, that we go through our lives taking so much for granted. And maybe there are things that we want to say but feel we can't, shouldn't, wouldn't. Maybe one day we will. I got to say all of that to John, and I feel that gives me a lot of peace, for sure.
Named after my mother. My old man is another
child that's grown old. If dreams were lightning, thunder were desire, this old house would have burnt down a long time ago. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo. Just give me one thing that I can hold on to believe in this living is just a hard way to go. When I was a young girl, well, I had me a cowboy. He weren't much to look at, just a free rambling man. But that was a long time, and no matter how I try, the years just flow by like a broken down dam.
Songs like he wrote, Sam Stone, Angel from Montgomery, Hello in There, they're probably the songs people are most familiar with, Fiona. Re-listening to songs like that, I know they're very healing for a lot of people. Do you find it helpful now to listen back to John's songs or not? Or does it make you too sad?
Yeah, it's something I couldn't do really until recently. We're working right now. My Jody, our oldest son, he runs our record label here in Nashville, Oh Boy Records, and does an incredible job. John was so proud of him. I mean, just, I don't know that Jody ever knew just how many times he would talk about, you know, we were on the road and people would ask about the record company, and that was John's cue to take off and gush about Jody for 10 or 15 minutes. So Jody and I are working together on an online tribute to John. Mm-hmm. We made a wish list of the people that we would love to participate, and we shot for the stars. We thought, okay, well, maybe this person, maybe that person. Everybody said yes, and so it will be a star-studded event. And in the course of putting that together, I've had to listen to some music, and it's hard. But you know, that's okay. I don't expect to be happy anytime soon, but I'm not desolate. I'm not joyless. We have our little grandchildren, which, you know, I said before John passed, and I still say, when those children are in the room, there's no world, there's no grief, there isn't even Donald Trump. I mean, they just are pure joy, and I still have access to that joy. John's music, it's going to take me a while before I can really revel in listening, but it's such a gift to have that music, Miriam. I'm so grateful. What a gift he left for all of us, not just for me and for the boys, but for all of us.
Absolutely, for everyone. When you say everyone said yes, I mean, when he died, everyone who is everybody in the music business who's alive spoke so well of him. So what kind of people did you make contact with?
We want to keep this as much a surprise as possible, but I will tell you that for those that are familiar with John's career, they can probably guess. If you keep an eye on John's socials on Instagram and on Facebook, or people can sign up at for the newsletter too. There'll be direct links to tell you how to sign up for the tribute, and so that you'll get to see it. It'll be premiered early June. It'll only be available for a few days, so I hope everyone gets to watch and enjoy it. We are so aware, all three boys and I are so aware, that we are not the only family facing this time of loss. But I would urge you, if you're hurting, if you're desperate, if you're angry, if you're lonely, if you're lost, please reach out to someone. Just reach out. It doesn't cost anything. And you might just save a life.
Well, that's a really lovely way to end our interview, Fiona. And we'll go out listening to your beautiful husband, John, singing Hello in There. Thanks so much, Fiona. Mind yourself. Take care of you and the three boys. And hopefully you'll be back to our draw very soon.
I hope so, Miriam. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you. And love to all my beautiful family in Ireland.
We had an apartment in the city. Me and Loretta like living there.
it'd been years since the kids had grown a life of their own, left us alone. John and Linda live in Omaha, and Joe is somewhere on the road.
Well, we've had an avalanche of love online for Fiona and John, including Bibi Baskin, who said that Fiona's late father, Donal, gave her grinds in Irish when she was just 10 years old. And that started her grow for Gaeilge, which has never left her. I'd also like to do a big shout out to Fiona's mother in Ardra. Good morning, Mary McCready, and I know you're listening. And to everyone in Ardra and beautiful Donegal today, my thanks and sound to Mark McGrath, to my producer, Shanna Gorman. Thanks so much for listening. Slán.
People just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to save.